Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 337. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, happy November. Oh, wait, what is there to be happy about?
Oh, Christmas is coming. Phil Wilson.
Hello.
Come on, you guys are getting ready for Black Friday, aren't you?
Hey, today, this breaking news. Today is Best Buy's first Black Friday sale. Starts at 1 p.m. local time.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious.
Oh, my God. Let's stop the show and let's go over there and line up right now.
What? It's only at select Best Buy. So the one in Burnsville near Phil and I is not part of it. But Richfield, we could drive up to Richfield. It's up there.
What?
Wow.
We could do a podcast from the line.
We could. Best Buy. I bet there's no line, though.
Yeah, probably not.
What?
All right.
Well, that was a good local story there to start off with.
Well, yeah, come on. Really? Black Friday stuff already? I mean, I see more idiotic retailers are hopping on the let's open on Thanksgiving bandwagon this year.
What? Well, except for REI.
Well, in Costco, there are a lot of them that are pulling back and saying we're not going to be open on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but Costco never was open on Thanksgiving. So,
yeah.
I know. But, all right.
It's like, REI is not only not open, they aren't doing Black Friday. Are they closing for the whole Friday or are they just not doing a sale? I don't know.
No, they're closing for Friday.
Yeah. Good for them. Because I think the whole Black Friday thing has just everybody is lost in the retail business. They just say, "Well, we got to do it." I can't imagine it really impacts Christmas sales that much. It's such a stunt. I don't quite get it.
Well, I think it's a starting gun. I think Black Friday, you know, when you pull the trigger on the starting gun and everybody races out of the blocks.
How many people do you know that actually go out on Black Friday?
I do.
All the women in my life, my daughter, my wife, my sister-in-laws, my sisters, everybody. I occasionally do, but I buy stuff online now.
I don't know anybody that goes out on
Black Fridays. I know everybody really? That just avoids it like the plague. Yeah.
All right.
It's jump the shark.
The great huddled masses are out, you know, oh, look, I can get a cheap DVD player for $20. Big deal.
Let's talk about let's get serious. Ready? Let's get serious. Graham, you placed a story in the show notes about the angel investment tax credit.
Well, actually, I didn't put it in there, but I'd be happy to.
Oh, you didn't?
I did.
Oh, well, either way, we need to hear about this because this is actually next year is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, it's sort of a boring legislature story at this point because it's going to heat up next year if it's going to be renewed. And this article quotes both sides of this is a Star Tribune article, which of course quotes people that think it's just horrible that the public should be supporting startups. But as I was saying earlier offline to you guys, Jeff Nelson.
We want to save our money for stadiums, damn it.
Yeah, right. Or one guy actually says pre-kindergarten. It's like, anyway, Jeff Nelson heads the program at Minnesota D. Jeff is a really nice guy, and he's been extremely supportive of local startups. He's a former commercial banker. So he knows what he's doing, and he administrates this program pretty damn well. And his quote in the piece, you know, after all the quotes of those who are questioning whether, you know, Minnesota should be doing this tax credit, he says, "We view it from another perspective. We are happy to import capital to grow Minnesota businesses," which I think is the crux of the situation. Out of state investors also can benefit from this program. And that's not true of all state angel tax programs. There are many, many states that have this type of program. We're not the only one,
right,
but like North Dakota, you've got to be a North Dakota resident. Minnesota, yeah. You don't. So, you know, Jeff views it as we're bringing capital from elsewhere, and that's what everybody's always bitching about, you know, that in the startup community, that, you know, that out-of-state investors just don't pay any attention to us. Well, they do now, and they have been through the Minnesota Angel Tax.
Well, and here's why I care about it, because there's a retired CEO up the street, and he and his wife, Angel, invested in a startup in Bloomington that was a high school buddy of their son's, and he's just grinning from ear to ear because they're making more money now than when he was working.
Ha ha.
Because they get 35% at the end of the year. He said, yeah. He said it's just making money hand over fist, best investment I ever made. And
meaning to take advantage of the angel tax credit as an angel investor.
Well, because
the company itself, you mean?
Right, and he's did it through his self-directed IRA or 401k, and you know that's one of the things I've been looking at is the returns in my 401k and thinking, you know, I ought to find a good angel fund and stick some of my dough in there, but the tax ramifications, you know, can be daunting. And that's why I'm interested in this.
Yeah. Well, talk to Jeff sometime. He's extremely knowledgeable and helpful. And, you know, I don't want to see that program go away. And I'm betting it won't. I think there's a lot of even bipartisan support. It means a lot to local entrepreneurs. And they set aside like upwards of almost half of it, I think, for women and minority-owned businesses. So there you go. You know, what's not to like?
Well, the crux of it, the concern is in the first paragraph here where it says that 579 jobs were created with the $60 million credit, which is $100,000 a job over 4 years from 2010 to 2014. So that, to me, that sounds like a very low return for the investment. So that's the concern, is that, you know, would it create more jobs? You know, if it had double that, then people would say, yeah, I mean, that makes makes more sense, I guess.
Well, you know, that's getting to be kind of a poor metric, because startups today don't require as many people. You know what I mean? They can be built on, you know, how many startups have you read about that are doing unbelievable amounts of revenue and they have like, you know, 13 employees or something?
Yeah, I'd like to see what the tax revenue that's been generated from it.
Yeah, the jobs thing, you know, and first of all, it hasn't been going on that long. That number is likely to get better over time. And also, there really hasn't been all that much money allocated to this program. It gets traditionally, it's gotten sucked up by about April of each year. And you know what I mean? There's only so much set aside for it. And by April, it's gone. But this last year they allocated more, including the women and minorities thing. And as of August, Jeff told me that, well, all the women and minorities portion didn't get taken up. So they're going to open that up to everybody because they want the amount that was allocated to be used. And so they did that. And last I heard, that was getting taken up pretty quickly. And I think they've announced the program for 2016 now, they will be shortly. And I don't know what dollar figure is on that. I forget how many millions they allocated, but I think it went up from 2015. But I can't assure you of that. You'd have to read about it. But it's a good program.
Well, Lee,
I like it.
Lee Schaefer, speaking of startups and investments and so forth, how was that for a segue? Anyway,
not good, but it's
it wasn't. But he talked about a Twin Cities startup shows how to succeed without Silicon Valley, and it was about Kipzu.
This is the Star Tribune. This is the you kids get off of my lawn Star Tribune writer, right?
Lee Schaefer. Yeah, he's a little bit that way. But you know, it's I have not yet seen Kipzu's solution. Action.
I haven't seen it demoed, but it has been, and it's pretty cool how you can text while you're at a hotel and get engage with, you know, if you're having a problem with something,
right?
you know, you can engage immediately with the management, or you can talk to others. I think I forget how it all works, but that's where they've gone first with their technology is text. And it turned out to be a very good bet because it's getting used and, you know, they're signing up customers pretty well, I guess.
Well, and it works with virtually every phone out there, even old flip phones like the ones Phil carries around.
Yes, it's true. I love that flip phone thing.
It's my
StarTAC has always treated me very well.
Exactly.
So Kipsu is doing okay, and our friend Justin, what's Justin's last name, that went from the U of M Venture Center to Kipsu about a year ago or so as a biz dev guy. He was obviously excited about it to make the jump to the startup world himself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, good for them.
Yay.
And then our buddy Julio had a interesting article. Now, I think we kind of touched on this last week.
We've talked about it 3 weeks in a row. But
this is new news.
I know, but I'm just saying that the whole story just sort of keeps on going. But now this time around, it's that there's been a judge
ruling.
I've got
good news for you, Phil.
Yeah.
Your Evo fast internet stuff is not dead yet. Yeah. So if you can charge that Evo back up, you can still use your WiMAX.
Yeah, so the article is about how a judge in Massachusetts has temporarily halted Sprint's plan to shut down wireless network for low-income households in Minnesota.
Well,
it's not just for them. It's for anyone that has an ancient device that uses WiMAX.
Right.
But it's kind of a moot point when it comes to the whole low cost or access that the company, the local company here is providing. What's the name of the local company, guys? I'm sorry.
U.S. PCs Internet?
Yeah, no.
Or
it's
PCs for People?
Yes, that's it. PCs for People. Yeah. Well, it works with Mobile Beacon and Mobile Citizen, which is built on the WiMAX network. I mean, it's kind of a moot point now because they've got another solution. They've moved over to the Comcast folks have come
well,
in.
Some of them have. About 1,000, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the article, they have a couple tallies, but not, you know, the vast majority of the people appear to be without a solution at the moment.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, so.
Who knows?
Well, also, Coco continues to get competition, this time from a company that has put in a 20,000 square foot space, RBC Plaza in downtown Minneapolis. And when I saw the headline, co-working space Industrious opens in Minneapolis, I thought,
you were hoping
for
Makerspace.
No. I was thinking, geez, you know, Coco's got yet another competitor. Then I started reading the article and I realized that, and Graham, you probably know this, in the 8500 tower in Bloomington, in the Normandale Plaza Towers, mm-hmm. on the ninth floor are one of many facilities that have these private offices. This one has 60 private offices starting at $600 a month. Right. And they don't, it's not really a co-working space. They basically have an open area with a bunch of tables. And it's like, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I didn't see how big those things were, but you know, we've always talked about, you know, transitioning that co-working space issue from, you know, having a, you know, open shared space in the, you know, in a large open area to having a, like an open area and then a ring of more private offices around it. And this is that sort of thing. But this is also very much, you know, you've been able, you're able to rent office space, you know, with shared resources pretty much anywhere. Yeah. So this is sort of a slight combination of those two, you know, with a $600 price. Yeah. With a $600 price tag and only 10 really open spaces. And it's not really, it's not on the same model as Coco by any means.
No, I didn't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, but I also look at it as, you know, I think Coco has been very successful building not only the spaces, but the community. And I don't, you know, having a space and being part of a community are two different things.
Yeah, for sure. But there's no question that this quote unquote co-working thing is going big time. I mean, there are big national players in this space. Yep. And but it's a real estate, more of a real estate kind of a play.
Yeah, it really is.
It's a way to make money as a mini landlord, or lease a huge amount of space and then sell it off in chunks on a monthly or 6 month lease basis, and make money on the difference. But the article goes on to say that another national outfit out of Chicago called Assemble is going to open one. And I've heard of another big one that'll be hitting town too. So this is it's blowing up, I agree with Phil. It's not really a competition to Coco and others, where individuals can buy even a 1 day a week membership,
right.
Which I did for a couple of years. And it was great. Or you can buy a 3 day a week membership.
Sure.
Well, this industrious doesn't even do that, so it's a different clientele, a different target market. But on the other hand, there would be competition to companies that Coco could sign for, say, a 6 person campsite, as they call it, that might look too industrious, for a better rate or better space for them or something. So
yeah,
it's competition.
Even Coco has expanded into sort of the space too. They have the space,
yes,
at least in Minneapolis, in the downtown, in the Grand Exchange building. They have offices that you can graduate to. I think they can hold 10 or 20 people,
yeah.
I think, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, some of them. They call them startup suites.
And the suites
they have now are different sizes. Probably the largest would be 10 people. Some of them look like, really only 4 or 5 fit in there.
Yeah.
But they are private, where you can close the door and have your own windows, but it's really just sort of one room.
Well, and a lot of companies demand that. I mean, when I was at Vignette, we were going to go up and lease a suite on that 9th floor in the 8500 tower, and unfortunately, the crash happened in March of 2000, so all of those got put on hold across the nation. But they demanded that. The offices were locked and secure and all of that, because we had stuff laying out all over the place about current clients and prospective clients and so on. And so that's one of the things about having these, is there are a lot of companies that are, they want their people in an office, and but that has to be secure.
Yep. So. The other thing this article said is this new one, Industrious, isn't aiming at startups. They're aiming at a lot of different categories, lawyers, advertising.
Looks like their 8-person office is $3,400.
Oofta.
Wow.
Really?
That's what it says here. 8-person
Industrious.
Office. Yes, you're talking, Industrious. Yeah.
But it's also in an A-class office building.
Yep. Yeah, who cares?
If you've got to have a
office building,
I know.
But if you see plazas, like, yeah, it's very.
But if you got to have a presence, for a company, and I can see why people would pay that kind of money. But
they might be able to get a shorter term lease. I mean, you got to gulp real hard as a new company to bite off a 5-year lease or a 10-year lease. But if you can go into these places for 6 months or even 12 months, it's a little less daunting, financially.
Yep. Well, hey, let's shift gears and talk about drones. And I'm still waiting to see drones with maybe some high powered lasers on it or something.
Lasers.
So we can start shooting at things. But
we're launching our phones.
That's right.
There we go. Yeah. But there are, as we've talked, maybe touched on before, there are going to be new rules by the FAA. They're trying to get these things all done before Christmas. But I thought this was a good move. They brought Best Buy on to help create the rules for drones in the U.S.
I guess I didn't know.
And recreational, although I guess it could also affect commercial drones. But, of course, the focus with Best Buy is obviously consumer use.
Does Best Buy have a huge drone department? I guess I haven't ever been there.
They're carrying several models already.
Okay.
I've never noticed one in the store, but maybe it's tucked around somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It would have DJI and Parrot and a few other brands.
Right.
You probably have to look around where the DVDs used to be. So,
yeah. But isn't this like having a gun dealer help you do your gun control laws? You know.
Well, no, because their incentive is to have this market expand dramatically. And so if the FAA says, no, you can't fly them within 25 miles of an airport, well, then now the whole metro area, just about can't have drones and can't fly them. And already in this article here in the Twin Cities Business, which I did not know, the Minnesota State High School League has already banned drones at all postseason tournament venues. The U of M warned that drones may cause acute stress in wildlife, so the Minnesota DNR asked drone operators to stay away from wildfires. They haven't banned them yet, but the Minnesota Department of Transportation using drones, so there's lots of different uses going on, but there's also, people doing really stupid stuff, where they're flying them over crowds.
Mounting guns on them.
Well, yeah. I want lasers. That? But anyway, I thought that was an interesting story.
I agree with Tim, though. It is sort of like, putting the fox in charge of the hen house. It's like, how'd you like that? Did you like that analogy?
Yeah.
This has to be a real coup for the Best Buy's director of government affairs to land himself a seat on this 26-person task force. I mean, that's a pretty good move on their part, I'd say.
Right.
But, there's no question it's an exploding market. And can the FAA keep up on it? That's the challenge. But it goes way beyond consumer drones. I mean, commercial drones is where the money is and where the market is already. And you guys touched on that last week on the podcast that I couldn't be on. My client Centera is right in the middle of that and is doing a lot of great work in at least three different commercial markets, agriculture, tower inspection, which kind of dovetails into bridge inspection and wind turbine inspection, and then public safety is another rapidly growing market for disasters and things like that.
You mentioned the bridge inspection thing. There's MnDOT's using those or consider using those, right? Or they're testing. I don't know if you saw this piece, a $40,000 drone?
Yeah, talking the story that we have in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty pricey one.
What does this one do? Wow, that's insane.
Well, it's a Swiss-made drone, and they could have gotten a perfectly adequate drone from Centera for probably, a third or a half of that. Centera resells Lockheed Martin drones and DJI and some of the others, so they're not.
Couldn't you do the same thing with the $350,
Here's the problem too is that a lot of these bridges, like the one that they show in the article here, the St. Louis Bay Bridge linking Duluth to Superior, Wisconsin, when they get up and underneath that bridge, there's so much metal there it acts like a Faraday cage almost. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if and it doesn't say anything in the article, but I'm wondering if this particular Swiss model, has some sort of advanced error correction capability in there to ensure that they don't get the thing up underneath the bridge and all of a sudden they lose signal and it plummets into the water.
I'll grant you it's a very sophisticated drone, but and you're getting at the software. The software is really where the game is here, and that's where Centera is playing. The hardware, a lot of it is commodity sort of hardware. I mean, they resell the DJI Phantom 3, which is basically like a $1,300 drone, but they upgrade it with better sensors, and it's all the software and image manipulation or image recognition and data that they get from the images. That's what their secret sauce is, and it's a very complex business.
Did we just hit on one of Graham's clients?
What's that?
Of course. Of course, but we should also talk about something that is has nothing to do with any of us other than Julio writes about these guys all the time.
I'm just kidding, Graham. I'm just giving you a hard time. Are you working with these guys? Because you sound very knowledgeable.
I've worked with them long enough to become dangerous. Yeah, a few months. No, I'm not pushing them. I'm just saying that
this business is
going to be big. It already is big business in Minnesota. And I do find it rather strange that DOT would go to a Swiss company for their drone. That's a little weird. But the other thing I found interesting about this story is the regulations are that the drone can't be within 500 feet of people. Well, how does that work for inspecting a bridge when people are in cars on the bridge? Do they have to close the bridge to do the testing? You know, I mean, that doesn't sound too workable.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anywho.
It's going on. It's happening out there.
It's happening, baby.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm sorry, Steve, you were trying to segue into the pad and quill.
Yeah, and this is one of Julio's favorite companies in St. Paul. And Pad and Quill makes all kinds of leather cases, beautifully done, for various smartphones and tablets. And now they're making Apple Watch bands, leather ones. Again, beautifully crafted, but they just launched a new handcrafted Horween leather bands for the Apple Watch. And if you don't know what that is, take a look at the picture in the show notes, and it looks like watch bands from the 1970s.
I know, I was going to say, I had one of these back in 1973.
I had a Horween band too.
Sideburns. Yeah. And bell bottoms and...
Yep,
you know. Yep. We were all listening
Paisley
to Led Zeppelin,
shirts,
you know,
tie-dyed shirts.
Pad and Quill's going to do the combination charging station bong and
exactly
strap. Yeah.
Oh my God. Anyway,
I do like the other one though. The Loud Grant nice. Band. That one. It's down the page a little bit. That one looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would get American Tan. I think.
Really?
I think
so. It's a nice color. It's a very very stylish. It makes the Apple Watch actually look nice.
I'll tell you, I'm really liking my band that came with the watch, though. Man, I have no complaints. It's so comfortable and holds up so well and everything.
You mean the rubber band that comes with it?
Yeah, I would not. Well, it's some kind of special polymer.
It's rubber.
Whatever it is, it's nice. It doesn't get hot. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't mark up. I mean, it takes abuse like the whole watch does in my experience. I have no complaints whatsoever. So I don't know if I'd want to go to leather, but some people do.
I like leather.
They're nice. They're good looking.
Very
There's
cool.
no segue to the next story, is there?
Well, there's not. This is not a Minnesota story, but it kind of sort of is because of smart things. But Kaspersky Lab, the big security research firm and product firm, because they sell stuff, there was one of their experts, David Jacoby, last year looked around his living room and wanted to figure out how susceptible all of his home automation devices were, you know, baby monitors and cameras and all that kind of stuff. And he basically found out that all of them were vulnerable to hacks. And
so why would you have a coffee maker that has a Wi-Fi connection? What's to remotely start your coffee?
Yeah. A lot of them have the startups, so it'll turn on in the morning and start the coffee.
Yeah. Mine does that too. It's called a clock that it.
I know.
it turns itself on.
Yep.
Yeah. No Wi-Fi needed.
Well,
yeah, maybe some of these apps you can monitor the temperature within a half degree and adjust it or something. I mean, some of these coffee people are like obsessed with.
Right.
You know, yeah.
It's got to be 192.
Coffee.
Right. Well, so Kaspersky Lab researchers went off and they looked at network attached servers and routers and smart TVs and all that stuff. And USB dongle for video streaming. I'm assuming it's Chromecast or something like that. A smartphone controlled IP camera, the coffee maker. A home security system and all that. And so I'm going through this article and it you know, it's, I mean, we know a lot of this stuff is vulnerable, right? I mean, this is one of the things that everybody's been harping on about the Internet of Things is the security aspect to it. Here's the part that just freaked me out. On Windows for the alarm, you have a contact sensor. So if the window is opened or broken, it'll change the magnetic field, the connection, and it'll set off the alarm, right? So what they did is they put a magnet on the door of the window, and then when the door or window is open, the magnetic field normally disappears, but in this case, it stayed connected even though they were opening the window, and the alarm didn't go off.
Oh, boy.
And I thought, oh, my God, seriously? And so, you know, it's pretty frightening. And then when I think about smart things, you know, things are relatively secure here, but still, I'm keeping my eyes open all the time for this kind of stuff, because this is going to get scary. You know, more and more of us are putting stuff in, and I have now helped two family members turn off Xfinity Guest Wi-Fi access to the routers that Comcast put in. In both cases, the installer did not change the administrative password.
Mm.
And nice. So their whole network was open. And,
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty frightening. So now Comcast is now doing a new thing where the routers and the passwords and the firmware printed on the bottom of the router. And so it'll be on by default. If you need to find if you need to get into the admin, you can do that. But this whole security thing is going to be a big deal. Well, hey, let's talk about Chrome OS. Tim, you know, this whole thing about Chrome OS and Android merging, what does that really mean? And
well, yeah, there was a story last week that we didn't get to, but it got around enough that basically said that Chrome OS, which is, in the Chromebook, and Android would merge, and they're on a collision course within the next couple of years. And Google came out this past week and said, no, Chrome OS is still, you know, here, and they're going to apparently bring more Android apps to the platform. But pretty much Chrome OS, the way it is today, will hang around, and it won't be merged, which is good. I don't think that Android is a productivity, you know, oriented operating system. It's not nearly, especially on a large tablet, not nearly as optimized as, say, an iPad is. So if you're going to do real work, Chrome OS is a better solution, which is, you know, it's basically running just the Chrome browser. And it's good to see that they're going to, you know, continue to bring more utility, which is bringing Android apps that you can run on Chrome OS, which really helps fill in some of the gaps that you can't do everything in a browser. So
nice.
Interesting.
Well, yeah. And you know, this is going to sound funny, and you guys probably already know this. Maybe you do, Phil, because it's probably come up in the technology thing in the Lakeville School District. But mm-hmm. As I'm reading this Chrome article, they talk about this Share to Classroom Chrome extension. And so basically what it is, for those listening, is the extension is one where you can actually, as a teacher, pull up a web page, and then you can click a push to students button, and every connected Chromebook in the classroom automatically pulls up that same web page.
Hmm. Wow. This could be used for ill, couldn't it?
It could be used for
well,
Ill.
It could
yes,
be.
It could be.
Yeah, yeah. If some kid hacks the teacher,
it's not used for
Ill.
Oh, man. Anyway, but apparently the Google Apps administrators can install the extension for their entire domain. So it could be very simple for the district, for example, or a Google Apps admin in a specific school to push out this extension to every single connected Chromebook. So this is cool stuff that I didn't even know, because I'm not paying attention really to K-12 education technology, but pretty interesting stuff. It'll be interesting to see how they are able to keep the fence around what kids can and cannot do if Android becomes part of Chrome OS and Android, in fact, do merge completely. See how they can keep that fenced in.
It will.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't sound like it's as imminent as it sounded like it was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, this next link I put in here is something called Hurricane LTEU. And essentially, LTEU is the unlicensed spectrum that has emerged because of UHF TV essentially going away. And it's the 5.8 gigahertz spectrum. And the mobile companies are going after it to essentially extend LTE. And that unlicensed spectrum will go away. So rather than have it be available to startups, for example, to do all kinds of different things with that unlicensed band, Qualcomm is pushing that new LTEU standard to essentially take control of that unlicensed spectrum. And this is very bad. Don't you think?
It could be.
It could be used for ill.
It could be used for ill.
That's right.
All right. I guess no one else is that concerned. That concerned. But you know why? Wi-Fi exists because of the unlicensed 2.4 gigahertz band, and then the 5 gigahertz band was unlicensed, so Wi-Fi extended into that, and we're all benefiting, every one of us. And so, you know, if they were to make LTEU free to everyone, anyone could use it, that would be great. But that, of course, is not going to happen.
Okay.
Yeah. The nice thing about the 5.8 gigahertz band is it penetrates better than 5. And that was one of the things about the 2.4 gigahertz band, was that it penetrated walls easier than the 5, so you didn't lose signal quite as fast in your house and so on. And the 5.8 apparently has the way that the frequency is, apparently it penetrates better than 5. So I'd much rather have new routers with 5.8 gigahertz than have to buy one from a mobile company and pay them.
So when is that coming?
Well, it's open in debate. I think it'll take through 2016 to get straightened out. So,
well, then I'm not going to wait to buy my new router. Actually, I already did, Steve.
Good. I'm glad you did.
Archer 7, baby. Too late. C7.
Good for you.
Archer C7. That'll
good for you. Hey, I forgot to tell you, Graham, that with a new router like that, you've got to wear lead underwear all the time.
Oh, okay.
Because of the radiation. So.
I'll dig those out of the bottom drawer. Yeah. Okay.
That means the copper stuff is no good anymore.
That's right. That's right. That thing you wear with it, you got to use the key whenever you have to pee. You have to get rid of that.
That one. Okay, that's the one.
Yeah, the one your wife makes you wear. Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. What a kidder. So our buddies at Apple have done yet another patent, and this time it's for something called panic mode. And I started to read through this, and I thought, well, what if you inadvertently use your, you know, you've got panic mode set up with your index finger.
This is yet the third thing now on the show that could be used for ill.
It could be used for ill. But I've been thinking about how cool this would be. So let's say that, you know, you're in a situation where somebody's going to force you to put your finger on your Touch ID to open your phone. And so instead you use, you know, maybe your
middle
thumbs
finger.
Are, yeah, yeah, you use yeah. your middle hey, finger buddy. Like, hey, F you. Hey, use your middle finger. And so you put your finger on there and it wipes the, panicking. And it wipes the phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that would be good.
Yeah.
You definitely have to use your middle finger for this panic finger.
The panic finger.
Yep.
Oh my God.
You have the finger.
Yeah, but bad guys will just say, hey, look, I won't cut your finger off if you open this. And oh, by the way, if you institute panic mode, I'm going to cut off all your fingers. You know, and then it'd be like, okay, I'll open my phone.
That would be a good name for the show, Panic Finger.
Panic Finger. Yeah. All right.
Panic Finger.
Pinky Panic.
Oh my God. All right. So I got to ask you something, Tim.
Yep.
So you revealed that you have, in fact, purchased an Apple TV.
Indeed.
Are you
Are on you, the first day it was available.
Yep. Are you a Plex boy by any chance?
I am. I run. That's how I watch Downton Abbey.
I am a Plex boy too.
Oh, I thought I thought you just threw everything into iTunes on your Mac Mini and just played it that way.
I do. I do. But I have. Well, I do. Here's why I did, because I. For some reason, I've got all these Mocha boxes set up. So for some reason, over Wi-Fi, it wouldn't connect with my iMac sitting in my home office. So I had to take my laptop out and literally unplug the Roku and plug in the Ethernet into the MacBook in order for stuff to stream properly. And so it's a long story. But anyway, the punchline is I was going to buy this knockoff Plex app. Well, I read the blog post from Plex that said they were going to be releasing a Plex app, and they did on Monday.
And I had bought the other one. It's $299, and I never got it to work.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm glad I didn't buy it then.
Yeah, I gave it a 2-star rating.
Got it.
But so the Plex app works right out of the box perfectly, and it's great. It actually looks better than the other one, too.
Really?
But you have to have a Plex media server?
Yes.
So what is that? Then what does that cost?
It's this free software that runs off your Mac or your Windows box, whatever you've got. It could be a laptop. I have it on my Mac Pro. So
okay, it's a free app you can get from the Mac App Store?
No.
You get it from Plex.
And so you can buy a premium version too. You can read about the features, but I use the free one. I used to have it on my Mac Mini, and then I got rid of my Mac Mini. And I'm thinking about going and buying another one.
Now, this is an excellent app, though. It's probably my favorite third-party app.
I was really pleased with it.
Although the HBO Go app is also quite good.
Yeah.
So if you're talking apps. I mean, right now, there's not a lot of apps that are outside of streaming TV. And this is one of the ones that, you know, is not on the old one that truly really good. And it probably shows you that this platform will develop into something interesting over the next 6 months or so.
So what more does it give you access to?
Your photos, your videos. Plex will go out and scan the folders you tell it to scan.
Mm. Well, the biggest thing is it does video transcoding on the fly. So you can have your videos in whatever format that you acquired them in. And, you know, the Mac operating systems, both of them, are notorious for only using certain kinds of encoded files. Mm. So this does all the transcoding on the fly. So you don't have to re-encode anything.
And what's nice about that is that if somebody does, in fact, do something, you know, like download Downton Abbey, and it happens to be a .mkv file, then you need to open up Handbrake. You need to transcode it. So that you can, in fact, have it as an MP4 and then play it back, and to Tim's point, that this eliminates that half hour of transcoding.
Right. So if you have a large movie collection, this is the app for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of my DVDs I ripped, and they're all sitting on a server that is fed through my Mac using Plex. So you can point your Plex thing to network attached storage and other, you know, it doesn't have to always be on your one machine if you don't want to.
Yep.
So it's very flexible that way. And it's free. Well, you can pay them for the premium. I just don't watch this stuff away from my house, so I've never felt the need to pay for them.
Yeah.
I'm sure I should, because I use it quite a bit.
The only thing that's been really missing out of the new Apple TV, I was stunned to see it missing, is the new podcast or a new podcast app.
Or any
podcast app. And I was just I was just blown away. And in fact, you know, the podcasting, Apple now, who was the first to enable podcasting to be easily used by the masses, has competition with Google that they've added podcasting into the Google Play Store. Which, by the way, the Minivay Gang podcast will be available hopefully today.
I was going to say, we can get that done.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew that was coming.
Well, yeah. So there is a workaround until they do a native app, which is you connect to the you know, the family sharing to another Mac in the house, or another computer using iTunes in the house, and then you do all of your podcast downloading on that machine, and you can then play it on your Apple TV.
Yeah, but what a pain in the butt, because I mean it's so
like
nice
taking
to be able
you back to the days of the iPod, really.
Right. And then, plus I like to sample stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so it was nice to be able to scroll through the old podcast app on the old Apple TV and just say, "Oh, I wonder what this is like," and just play that one, and was able to, you know, you're able to do a lot of discovery.
Well, I think that there is an Apple podcast app coming.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Because there's been some screenshots taken.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that people have seen, like the demo. If you go to the store, there's apparently a demo loop, which I didn't see because I went there on launch day and I actually used the one on the floor. And it was just running, you know, it was running the main software, so I was able to get a full idea. But apparently there's a loop running on them, and there's an icon that looks just like the podcast icon. So, I'm sure that Apple will – I'm surprised no third-party Overcast or Pocket Cast or any of those did one. I would, you know, I would hope that one of those guys would come up with something soon. I know that Overcast just started supporting streaming, so that may be why he didn't do it, because that's what you'd want is a streaming podcast app, not a download and play podcast app. So,
well, I want to tell you that it was nice to see another new app that's available on iOS, is now available on Android, called Signal, the Snowden-approved crypto app.
Snowden approved.
If you go to,
does he get a take of that? I mean,
the band has like a good housekeeping. Yeah. Like
right. Well, so here's the thing. This is the first chat and call end to end encrypted app. So you can send text messages and you can also make encrypted phone calls to anybody that has the app. So I can call a Signal. Another Signal user through the Signal app, and it's totally encrypted, and nobody's got access to it. And it's been peer reviewed, and it's getting extremely high marks from just
terrorists
about everybody.
And drug dealers.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? I know. It'd be much different if I was being paid to keep the country safe. I would be also like the head of the FBI. You know, give me a back door and everything. But it's pretty cool. Jamie Thingelstead connected up with me, and he's on there, and a couple of other people.
Yeah,
he's
the only other one besides you.
Oh, I got a couple of other people that are in my in my contact list.
Do they deal drugs? No, I'm not.
All right, guys, you got to get signed up, because I can't just be connected to just Steve here.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm working on it.
But here's the thing that I had actually talked to one of my clients who has to keep things secure, and they're looking at rolling this out throughout the entire company. They got 120 employees. They're looking at make, because they were looking at the Black Phone, you know, which is the Phil Zimmerman company that makes this phone. It's an Android phone that's totally encrypted, everything about it. And they were looking at those phones, and everybody was like, no, we wouldn't just use our regular phone. And so now if they have an iPhone or they have an Android phone, they can use Signal and get the same benefit. So I thought that was cool.
All right.
So there you go.
Well, when you have to send me secret stuff, you know how to get a hold of me.
Well, I got to find something secret to send you. Anyway.
There's that.
Yeah. You know, did you leave that barn door open, Phil?
I did, as a matter of fact.
Steve's security tip of the week.
And there goes the horses.
The barn door was left open. So my tip this week has something to do with helping your loved ones, because we know everyone listening, we know you guys and everyone listening are security mavens, right? But the kicker is that you probably have loved ones that only use a web browser and maybe email, and that's it. Maybe Facebook too. They go to Facebook in their
browser. But in their browser.
In their browser.
Maybe was a Facebook app.
You're right. There was a story in the New York Times which has been picked up by actually a couple of other news articles as well, news organizations as well, about a woman who appears by the picture to be in maybe her early 60s near San Francisco, who challenged two pro hackers to take a crack at hacking her home, but they hacked her in advance too. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the article because it's a great read. It's real fast and real easy. And basically, before they even showed up at her house, they found her fairly locked down Facebook account and saw that she liked change.org. So they sent her a phishing email from change.org. And she clicked the link, went to the fake change.org website, and put in her email address and password. And so, of course, now they own her email account. And then a few days later, they show up at her house. They had an appointment with her. And they opened up her garage door with a rolling code opener. They were able to control her DirecTV from outside the house because the installer forgot to secure it with a password. So they bought a three-hour pass to a bunch of porn channels. Then they got into her email, or because they were in her email, they searched Social Security number and found her Social Security number, a power of attorney form that was signed, got into her PayPal account, her Air Miles account, and had all of her insurance information. And then once they were in the house with her, they were able to look at her router because she had a post-it note on there with all the passwords. And so they were able to get into everything, but they scanned her PC for malicious programs, and they found about 20 of them. And these were programs that could download more malware. And so they're going to have to wipe her system to get rid of all of it. But they immediately told her, you know, get a new garage door opener. And somebody in the comments said, no, just get a new controller that is resistant to those rolling code openers. It changes the key code every time. Use two-step verification for your email, and we've talked about that before. Password protect your stuff. Make sure your router's got a password on it, and even her DirecTV as well, because they could get into that separately. Get a password manager, and like LastPass or 1Password or something like that, and then always run updates, and in fact, switch on automatic updates wherever possible. I'm going to put those tips in the show notes, so you've got those. And that's my tip of the week. You know, reach out to your mom or your dad or your sisters and brothers or other family members that are, you know, maybe okay with computers, but need help.
Yep.
And that's my
security tip of the week. Nice.
One more thing. I put in a little bonus link. The value of a hacked email account from Krebs on Security from 2013. Take a look at this article and just click on the graphic and look at what he put together for what you can lose if you lose access to your email accounts for somebody, if you get hacked and somebody gets it. Mm. So that's my tip.
Good one. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to be able to afford three new garage door openers. So
yeah, I'm trying to figure that one out myself. Yeah.
There goes a grand down the chute.
No,
just installed and everything.
No, I think you can just get new controllers for them.
Get new controllers, yeah.
I don't know.
But still, that's
depends on your model, I'm sure.
Yeah, it does.
Mine aren't that new, so.
Yeah.
There's another upgrade. There's more money I got to figure out how to get.
Well, instead, let's talk about how you're going to spend money on the cool things of the week.
There you go. Yeah.
All right.
We have... Can we like release chickens on that or something?
We release
horses in this one, but not something. Yeah. We need some sort of barnyard animal to kick off the cool thing.
Yeah, goats. It should be goats.
Sheep. Sheep are always good.
Sheep.
a parrot.
Cool thing of the week.
Thing of the week.
All right. We've lost Steve. He's nodded off. Usually he's chuckling. Or maybe he's just sitting back and rolling his eyes right now.
Hey, partner, that is some finger there you're packing, huh?
You couldn't really tell what that was.
It was a train and the Fonz.
It was the Fonz. Hey, you knew it was the Fonz. I was gonna have him.
Wow.
Do something like, hey, cool. Anyway.
All right. Anywho. So,
Phil, what's your cool thing, buddy?
My cool thing of the week is not exactly, revolutionary or really hip or anything like that, but I ordered a new Magic Trackpad 2, and I got to tell you, I was just, I like the fact that it's a, you know, it's an Apple product, and I love the fact that, you know, it's wireless. But, you know, the biggest thing that I like about the new line of Magic accessories is they're all rechargeable. Because I tell you, we have nothing but Bluetooth keyboards and trackpads and mice at the office. And we're an office of some 30 people. You have no idea how many batteries we go through. It's just insane. So rechargeable trackpads and USB Magic devices from the fine folks at Apple, really like them. And they look pretty damn sexy too.
And they're all Lightning, right?
They're all Lightning. Yeah, Lightning.
Connectors.
Yep. Which is great. I mean, if you're going to, if you have a Mac device, yeah, you've got Lightning cables around. Trust me.
That's right.
Yep. So that's
cool.
Okay. So
that is cool.
Yeah, it's all right. It's no Tim Elliott cool, though.
And what's yours, Tim?
It's another podcast. It's called Control Walt Delete, and it's from The Verge. And it's basically Walt Mossberg, the famous writer from The Wall Street Journal, who's now at The Verge, and Nilay Patel. And they talk for about a half an hour about technology once a week. And it's very listenable, not too crazy. And it's now my weekly replacement for the Twit podcast, which got too long for me.
That's like an hour and a half.
Yeah. So this is the same sort of thing, but with two knowledgeable guys, and it's very nice. I think it's 8 weeks old. And
So what we're saying is, stop listening to us. Listen to these.
Yeah. You may want to listen to to this podcast. It's
in addition to the
in addition to well, they don't talk about anything from Minnesota. So
should do is kind of pair ours back. Then is what you're saying. So then you could take the hour that you're spending with us each week.
It's like Twit's like 2 hours. Yeah, and I just don't have 2 hours to listen to it.
All right. Yeah, so the same
this
way.
This is my replacement.
Yeah, I listened to this one on the plane when I went out to the Bay Area a couple of weeks ago, and I liked it. The guy's pretty funny. I think they pronounce it Nilay or something. Nilay Patel. That guy is a riot. And Walt is pretty quick on the comebacks. You know, they play off each other pretty well.
Yep.
Yeah, Nilay is the editor in chief, right? Of The Verge.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Cool. It's a good one.
All right, Graham, what's yours?
Well, I got another Apple one, but the beauty of this is it's free. It's a cool thing that's free. But those gorgeous screensavers on the Apple TV, which both Tim and Steve are partaking of, right?
Yep.
They're great.
And I'm going to be partaking of them. I've had my Apple TV for a while here, and I'm finally going to have time to hook it up this weekend. But I saw this story on the Next Web where you can get these things on your Mac. Some guy wrote an app, a Swift app, and you just go to GitHub and download this thing, and it's freaking great. I'm loving it. I've had it for a week or more now on my MacBook, put it on my old iMac too, and it's fantastic. And I didn't realize for a while, on your trackpad, you can cruise through the image. You know, it's like drone or helicopter footage of these wonderful resort locations around, well, not resort locations. There's a lot of Hawaii and China, it's mostly Bay Area and New York urban scenes. But the stuff over the Golden Gate Bridge is just fantastic. Steve, with all of what we've been doing with foggy shots of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you've seen the ones on your Apple TV, haven't you? Around the Golden Gate?
Oh, absolutely. Well, in fact, here's the kicker, though. The kicker is that the guy that wrote the program is actually connecting to the screensavers from an Apple site, which means if you want this, I would suggest you get it fairly quickly.
Because it'll be cut off.
Apple's going to cut it off. Mm-hmm. I really think so.
Yeah, well, you just put it into your library folder, library/screensavers, and it worked like a charm for me right from the get-go.
It works great. It's just that it's pulling the actual video file from Apple servers, and all they have all they have to do is say forget it. So I'm surprised it hasn't been crushed yet.
Yeah. So, well, eventually,
it is pretty cool. I got to tell you,
he probably reverse engineered the way that the Apple TVs do it, and it so it looks his app looks like an Apple TV.
So the user agent is okay.
Yeah, I bet that's it. So they can't be sure that it's an Apple TV or it's your iMac running it.
Right. So.
Okay. Well, I've just been loving it, though. I mean, I sit and stare at my screen and get nothing done all day long.
No, you're saying, hey, there are little cards on the Golden Gate Bridge moving along.
Oh, and they're moving. And I can take two fingers to my trackpad, and I can kind of zoom in and go across the bay. And, oh, is anybody surfing down there by the, Fort Point or whatever it is, And you should
look. Tell me when you see the shark.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a shark there that I'm not going to tell you where it is. You're just going to have to look for it.
Hey, oh, my God.
Phil and Tim, Graham will be looking all day.
Yeah, there you go. There isn't one.
Well, you can't quite get in that tight to see, No,
that's true.
Close, but it's really
all right, what's
fun.
Steve's?
I love it.
What's Steve's?
What's mine? Mine is a site that I came across when I was doing some research on product, and it's called BrightKite. And I'll put link in the show notes to the lists. They categorize stuff. So let's say you're looking for video editing software. You can go in and click on the category, and it lists all these companies. And I found in many of the categories there are some ones that are missing. That's not complete. But in every single category I've looked at, there have been two or three companies in there that I've never heard of before. And so if you're out doing due diligence on, geez, I need web hosting, or I need voice over IP, or I need a landing page creator, or I need, whatever it happens to be, you can at least start here. It's a great place to find companies that are providing products and services in these various categories. That's my cool thing.
Very cool.
That's cool.
They don't really necessarily review. They just access them, right?
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
But it helps than, trying not to do a Google search for everything.
Yeah, it's a directory.
Yeah.
Well, I tried drones and got nothing, but I did just try marketing analytics, which is the subject of the next conference I'm co-hosting, and there's a ton of stuff in here on marketing analytics. Of course, they should be. There's something like 2,000 vendors that play in that space now.
Yep.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's a good one, though.
So, Graham, you sent around this reverse elevator pitch panel thing, and we stuck it in the show notes last week. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about it?
What is it?
Well, yeah, it's I know the folks that are putting it on. I'll be out of town because I'm headed out to the DFRAG conference in Denver again.
But what does this do? I don't understand.
Yeah, what is a reverse elevator?
What is a reverse elevator pitch?
The idea is usually startups are pitching investors. This is going to be essentially investors pitching at startups saying, this is what we look for. It's kind of a fancy name for, an investor panel is
okay,
what it
gotcha.
Is.
Okay, gotcha.
But, it'll be a panel of angel investors on the criteria they use in evaluating a business opportunity to invest in. So there's a few guys on the panel I know, one I don't. Moderated by Rick Brimacombe, who I know well, and Michael Moore is on the panel from the University of St. Thomas William C. Norris Institute.
Okay,
my
cool.
old employer. Yeah,
it's coming up on Tuesday.
It's coming up on Tuesday. Yeah,
it costs some bucks, but
yeah,
$25. That ain't bad.
And then what else was it? The Techopolis isn't new. We did that last week, didn't we?
We did.
We did that last week.
Okay. Yeah. What is new this week? I did put in our Mobile Twin Cities event. We're doing an IoT for the holidays.
Oh,
event.
Fun.
So
that'll be good.
Check that out. I'll get a link into that.
The old BuzzFeed office.
At the BuzzFeed office, we're going to be doing Justin Grammons will be in kind of doing a state of IoT. And then we have representative from Verizon coming in to talk about retail and IoT, and then hopefully showing off a few gadgets for the holidays.
Yeah, because Verizon's got that new IoT platform initiative, so maybe they'll talk about that. I hope.
And I'm gonna get some eggnog. So there you go. How bad could it be, right?
Will Justin be dressing up?
I don't know.
Will he at least have a Santa hat on? Or?
He'll be wearing a Santa hat.
All right, then I'll come.
There you go.
Good. Well, I think we've nailed it, boys.
Yeah, and there'll be something happening this week, I'm sure, and we'll cover it on
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Yes.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
Have a good week. Bye.